places. Everyone.
We're now broadcasting.
Roll the tape in. 3, 2.
A new audio drama.
Appaloosa Radio is where stories come alive.
Go.
The Jet-Propelled College. Get your degree in less time. For less money. Study at JetTastic School.
The Gatekeeper, an Appaloosa Radio original story. He graduated from Florida State University, where he had majored in being a fraternity brother. After his college experience, he drifted into what for some types of people is the easiest of all jobs. Selling. Tony Box was a natural. People instantly trusted and liked him. He was not handsome, but he had an easy boyish smile and he always looked at you directly, never turning aside or evading. Easy to trust. Very likable. Please sign here. Lots of places to sign, way too much paperwork to read it all now. So, sign here and here and here. Congratulations! You are now a Florida property owner. Lot 117C of the Whispering Pines Senior Resort Community. Have you thought about what kind of mobile home that you would like us to move onto your property? Our affiliates over at Action Manufactured Homes have just the one for you. The one that you have always dreamed about. If you wish, I'll drive you over now and help you get the process started. They gave him award after award after award. Tony Box, Salesman of the Month for March. Tony Box, Salesman of the Month for April. Congratulations! Tony Box, the 1958 Salesman of the Year. His former fraternity brothers never understood why Tony would give up such a good thing and move to Los Angeles. All he ever told them was that he was tired of selling swampland to tourists. They laughed. That was Tony's perpetual joke. What do you do for a living? Oh, I sell swampland to tourists, complete with alligators and mosquitoes. Selling lots in the Whispering Pines Senior Resort had been a goldmine for him. He now owned his own boat, was buying a house, and he drove a blue Triumph sports car. Yet, Tony Box had another dream. He had a deep, sonorous voice. He dreamed of becoming a voice actor, doing commercials, and narrating films. His ultimate dream job would be to become the voice announcer for a game show.
Welcome to America's favorite game show, where anyone can win big. Featuring our host, Phil and Amanda. Maybe Jack or Pete or Bill or Clint or Jonathan. Tony, please tell them what prize they have just won. They have just won a brand new car from our friends at Gleason Brothers Buick. Buick, the car of distinction. The car of pride.
Tony Box sold his boat, cancelled his purchase on the house, and loaded one suitcase with clothes onto the passenger seat of his Triumph sports car and began the drive west. Los Angeles proved not to be the land of infinite opportunity that he thought it would be. After a few weeks, Tony Box accepted a job that was very different from what had been his Hollywood dream. He was hired as a student recruiter for a nondescript college located on Western Avenue, in East Hollywood, just down from Barnstable Park. Back in the 1920s, Barnstable Park had been the epicenter of a burgeoning art scene in Los Angeles. Oil heiress Aline Barnsdall had brought Frank Lloyd Wright into design theater and art studios for her on a property she owned. Then she asked him to design her a home there, and he created the first of his unique Southern California homes. When she died, she donated the property to the city of Los Angeles as a creative space for the arts. Just a few blocks away was the University of California, Southern Branch, which would later become UCLA. Tucked in between was the Golgotha Hill Christian College and Pastoral Study Institute. The Golgotha Hill Christian College and Pastoral Study Institute. Tony Box was not a religious man. He believed that his mother may have been a Catholic before she discovered her true religion, gin and tonic, light on the tonic. Tony's father had been a warrant officer in the Navy, and swearing like a sailor was a trait he was amply proud of. Tony's father had been killed at Pearl Harbor, but not on the day of the Japanese attack. He was killed 3 days later when the salvage vessel he was on capsized, and all hands were lost. Tony more or less raised himself, a kid who loved the beach more than school. He managed to get into Florida State, pledged to a fraternity, and became a self-described frat rat. He took the job at Golgotha Hill Christian College and Pastoral Study Institute because it was in the Hollywood area, which meant he could still make auditions and tryouts. Of course, he had no salary, just a commission for each student that he was able to recruit. Golgotha Hill Christian College and Pastoral Study Institute had had other names at other times. It claimed to be the historical successor to Oxford College. The problem was that no one was now sure which Oxford College that was. There was an Oxford College founded in 1868 in Mississippi that enrolled freed black slaves. Unfortunately, that college was burned down multiple times, and there was no evidence that it had been re-established in California. There was also an Oxford College founded in Minnesota in the 1860s, but there is no historical evidence that it had ever been moved to California. The California Secretary of State's office did have a record of an Oxford Bible Institute founded in the late 1860s in San Diego, but another California college also claims to be the historical successor to that institution. The so-called Pastoral Study Institute, on the other hand, has a clearly defined starting point, April 8, 1948. It was begun by the radio evangelist C. Durham Patterson, who frequently requested funding from his listeners. He raised $45,000 and began the Institute's program. However, it was never a program to educate undergraduate students. It was always, as C. Durham Patterson said, a place for experienced pastors to gain respite and to deepen their understanding of their faith. Pastors came for 3 to 6 months and were given a certificate, but not a diploma. The name Golgotha Hill Christian College also had a well-defined point of origin. The current college president, Howard Joyce, had instituted the change when he arrived. Before his arrival, it was called William Woodward College, named for a wealthy citrus rancher who had donated his entire estate to the college. However, President Joyce wanted a distinctive name that highlighted the most significant element of the Christian faith. He chose Golgotha Hill. Tony Box was a Florida salesman who had earned his considerable income selling recent retirees a 1,000-square-foot land parcel in a mobile home park. The key to any sale was getting the buyer to see the dream, to see how much their new life in the Florida mobile home park would contrast with living in Buffalo or Chicago or Detroit. It was a siren's song. Beautiful photographs of beautiful people being perpetually happy. For only $32,500, the Florida dream could be yours. What Tony Box never told his customers was that his commission was 10% of the sale, extracted primarily from their initial down payment. He always worked hard for as large a down payment as he could get the customer to give him. "Lowers your monthly payments," he would tell them. In truth, Tony Box never trusted the development company. He knew that they could go out of existence faster than a jet plane could fly from Miami to New York City. "Get your money first." It was his cardinal rule. Now, he was a recruiter for the Golgotha Hill Christian College and Pastoral Study Institute. His problem was how to extract money from that position. From the look of the campus, there was not a whole lot of money to easily extract. Things were poorly maintained. Even had they been maintained, the buildings were not very attractive. Sort of a pink stucco Gothic look. Compared to the sleek modern campus of the Los Angeles City College just up the street, Golgotha was a dump. The Golgotha Hill Christian College and Pastoral Study Institute campus occupied 27 acres facing onto Western Avenue close to Barnstall Park. The campus might have been attractive had it been well maintained. Unfortunately, by the late 1950s, Western Avenue was looking pretty seedy, and the college was in sore need of many, many repairs. How do I sell this kind of place? Tony asked himself. He decided to wander around the campus to see what he could learn. Excuse me. I am just joining the staff of the college, and I'm trying to figure things out. Could I buy you a coffee and talk about this place?
Sure.
Glad to. So, what made you come to Golgotha Hill Christian College and Pastoral Study Institute? Are you religiously inclined?
No.
Not really. I'd like to be a high school history teacher. I started at the junior college.
You mean Los Angeles City College?
Yeah. I just moved over here because it was close. And it was easy to get in. Am I correct if I said you came because of convenience?
Yeah.
That's pretty much it. How has it been?
Not that good.
But I'm here and I'll stick it out. Is there something that would make the place better?
Yeah.
If I could get out faster. Would save me a bunch of money. Maybe, I could take an exam instead of having to do a whole course.
Credit by examination.
Yeah. Exactly. Could get done faster and cheaper. The Golgotha Hill Christian College and Pastoral Study Institute was about to change, but it just did not yet know it. Master salesman Tony Box was about to change everything and make a lot of money doing it. In 1952, radio evangelist C. Durham Patterson had personally selected Howard Joyce to lead his Pastoral Study Institute. Patterson's radio broadcasts originated in Chicago, where Howard Joyce pastored a large church. The men knew each other from their work on the Greater Chicago Christian Morality Council. Joyce was an easygoing man, likable but not daring. Just the sort of man that C. Durham Patterson wanted. Keep things going, no need for bumps in the road. Just an even keel in smooth water. The biggest problem for Howard Joyce was that Patterson wanted to locate an institute in Los Angeles. A new place in a new context. Just before Howard Joyce moved his family to Los Angeles, Patterson called to tell him the great news. He had found a small college that they could buy into. Not only a place for pastors, but also a college that could be used to train Christian young people. What an opportunity! What an incredible opportunity! A week later, Howard Joyce received another phone call. This time it was from Patterson's widowed mother. Her son C. Durham Patterson had died from a sudden heart attack the day earlier. She begged Howard Joyce to continue her son's dream. Build the Pastors Institute and college as he wanted in Los Angeles. Howard could not refuse. However, what the elderly Mrs. Patterson did not say was without her son's radio show and the massive fundraising that accompanied it, there was no ongoing funding for the enterprise. There was money to complete the purchase of William Woodward College, but after that there was nothing. Howard Joyce was left with a college to run and fund in a city that he did not know. Tony Box hated coming onto the college's campus. With the exception of the nicely appointed Pastors Institute, the college was a run-down, somewhat depressing place. During World War II, the campus had been turned into a training facility for Navy officers. Dormitories had been squeezed into buildings originally designed for other purposes.
The administration building, the library, and the theater all were repurposed by the Navy, but then never returned to their original design when William Woodward College opened its operations again. Buildings were still painted in battleship gray. To make things even worse, the campus still had signs saying William Woodward College. No one, except the college's president, Howard Joyce, seemed to know, or use, the college's current full name. Depressing place without an identity. Very depressing place. No identity. There was no dream to sell in such a place, and Tony Bock's key to success had always been selling a dream. Something much better than what currently is. Tony Bock hated coming onto the college's campus. Very hard to recruit students to a place like this. He could have quit and found another job. Instead, Tony decided to move recruiting operations far away from the campus, to a small office in West LA. Closer to the beach. Better for creating an image. He paid the first month's rent out of his own pocket. Get students interested in a college with no identity. How to overcome the many negatives that the college presented. The answer, in Tony Bock's mind, was to create a brand new identity, one that sold the dream instead of the current depressing reality. But, how to do that effectively in a place as large as Los Angeles? It took Tony a couple of days, but then he had the answer. Radio. More specifically, radio commercials. Tony knew that he did not want to advertise on the news radio stations. No, young people did not listen to the news. Nor did he seek to advertise on the stations that still played music from the swinging 40s. No, the Chattanooga Choo Choo had left the station long ago. He wanted to reach young people, people who listened to music on their transistor radios. Young people who listened only to rock and roll. Whole lot of shaking going on. Splish, splash, I was taking a bath. We were short shorts. Love potion number 9. He created a radio commercial that would be broadcast on rock and roll radio stations. One that he believed would cast the college in a whole new light and, thus, attract more students.
Golgotha, the jet-propelled college. Get your degree in less time. For less money. Study at Jetastic Speed.
The ad was simple and ran for only 30 seconds. Go! 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 Golgotha! The jet-propelled college. Get your degree in less time. For less money. Study at Jetastic Speed. Study at Jetastic Speed. What a slogan. It cast the college in a whole new light. It was not an old assortment of crumbling buildings painted battleship gray. It was no longer a hodgepodge of unconnected classes taught by an underpaid and substandard faculty. It was not just a place to go, convenient because it was just down the street from Los Angeles City College. No. It was the college where things happened at jet-tastic speed. By doing the voiceover himself and by talking an acquaintance who worked at a small, low-power radio station into doing the recording, he was able to do the whole thing for just $85. However, he needed much more to actually pay for the broadcasts. Tony Box had no choice. He had to ask college president Howard Joyce for the funding. Unfortunately, Tony Box had never met Howard Joyce. The college's executive vice president for business affairs, Ben Hogan, had paid an employment agency to hire a college recruitment team, but instead of a team, he ended up with just one recruiter, a suntanned guy from Florida who looked like a movie star wannabe. When Ben Hogan came up with the idea of hiring recruiters, he was thinking he might locate some high school counselors looking to earn extra income. Tony Box did not match his expectations. At least the guy did not cost anything. He was working on commission. Instinctively, Tony knew to avoid Ben Hogan. Best, he decided, to directly approach Howard Joyce himself. One sunny afternoon, he walked into President Joyce's office suite and told the secretary that he was leading the college's recruiting team and wanted to bounce some ideas off the big guy. "I don't see you on President Joyce's calendar." "That's okay, miss. He told me to drop by and discuss strategies." Just then Howard Joyce came out of his office and Tony grabbed his arm in friendly fraternity brother style. "Howard, you said to come by when I had worked up some ideas. I was on campus this afternoon and thought now might be the best time to share them with you. I thought Ben Hogan was handling this." "He is, sort of. But his vision is always on the financial picture. I wanted to talk directly to you so I can gain your vision about what the college can become. The marketing campaign is about the possibility, the unlimited. The nothing can stop us unlimited possibility. The kind of vision that can only come from above." Tony Box spent an hour and a half with President Howard Joyce. He left with the promise of $5,000 to pay for the radio ads, another $1,000 to print full-color brochures, and a new title, Director of Student Recruitment, responsible directly to the president. Howard Joyce did not know it, but he had just made the best deal he would ever make in his lifetime. Tony Box was unstoppable. When Tony Box initially met with Howard Joyce in the president's suite, the Golgotha Hill Christian College and Pastoral Study Institute enrolled 612 undergraduate students and had 34 pastors in the study institute. The very next fall, the college enrolled 789 undergraduate students and 30 new pastors at the study institute. Tony Box never computed the percentage of gain that his work had created, but Ben Hogan did. He determined that there was a 28.921569% gain in revenues from student tuition fees. In practical terms, that increase meant that the college went from barely making its payroll, with money for nothing else, to having money also for repairs, repainting, and refurbishing. Howard Joyce gave Tony Bock a new title, Vice President for Development. Radio evangelist C. Durham Patterson had raised thousands of dollars to fund his dream of a pastoral study institute. His listeners were generous. It only took 17 months to raise the funds needed. Then, he learned that he could purchase an entire college for only $120,000 more. This time a single donor had pledged the funds necessary to buy the college. When C. Durham Patterson died unexpectedly, his trust had acquired both the college and the study institute. Unfortunately, Howard Joyce, the man that C. Durham Patterson had selected to run things, lacked the magical fundraising abilities of the radio evangelist. In fact, when it came to fundraising, he was beyond inept. Howard Joyce was also the kind of administrator who seldom ventured beyond his office suite. One important consequence of that administrative style was that he did not know his own faculty, particularly those faculty members that he had inherited from the former William Woodward College. To be sure, every year, at the beginning of the fall term, he would host a meet-and-greet event for the faculty, but the affair lasted only a couple of hours, and then Howard Joyce would retreat back into the security of his office suite. Had he come to really know his teaching faculty, he would have quickly realized that the college employed a woman faculty member, regarding whom the radio evangelist C. Durham Patterson would have strongly disapproved. More precisely, he would have been aghast. The faculty member taught zoology, human physiology, and microbiology. Courses that C. Durham Patterson would have known nothing about. However, if had learned that the faculty member was a professing atheist, and that she often clearly said, "There is no God. No creator. Only the forces of evolution working themselves out through the species." Well, that is entirely enough. Entirely enough. Tilde, tilde, tilde. Miss Solveig Linnea Solimiabot was as formidable as her nearly unpronounceable Norwegian name. She stood over 6 feet tall and had, for a brief time in the 1930s, been an Olympic downhill skier. Her hair was once a deep cinnamon, but by the late 1950s, it was a white grayish color that she left uncut and uncombed. She wore dark-rimmed glasses with thick lenses. Unfortunately, she often lost her glasses among the paraphernalia and apparatus in the large room she called her laboratory, so she had multiple pairs laying around in various places. Of course, she was never out of her white lab coat, full length, always buttoned up the front. There was a rumor among the faculty that Miss SM, no one would attempt her full name, was independently wealthy. She never complained about her meager salary. Nor did she get aroused when the college could not meet its payroll. And she was known to personally buy equipment that she deemed necessary for her laboratory. But no one knew. In fact, no one knew much about her. Nothing about her personal life away from the college. Nothing about what she actually taught or how she taught it. She forbade all visitors. No one had ever mustered the courage to confront her. At William Woodward College, what happened in zoology, human physiology, and microbiology were the private domain of Miss Solveig Linnea Solimiabot. When the new regime arrived, she made sure that they understood the rules. This was her turf. Keep away. The war between Tony Box and Miss Solimiabot began in earnest at the beginning of the fall semester 1960. Tony had grown the college to over 1,000 students. Campus buildings had been modernized. There was even some talk about shortening the college's name to Golgotha University. Not all of the faculty supported the new credit by examination policy. Most notably was the opposition of Miss Solimiabot. That really was not much of a problem for college president Howard Joyce because, truthfully, not many students seeking a jet-tastic education enrolled in the courses she taught. Many of the students now coming to the campus were older, beyond the traditional college-going age. A quick jet-tastic was just what they wanted for career advancement. However, Tony Box came up with another innovation that placed him directly in the Norwegian woman's crosshairs. He was about to enter her sacred turf. Tony's back had been bothering him and he made an appointment with a chiropractor. As always, Tony Box made immediate friends with the practitioner.
He learned that the chiropractor had always wanted to be a medical doctor, and that an interesting possibility had just opened up. A medical school in the Caribbean was willing to admit any American student who had completed 30 semester units in a university pre-med program. The chiropractor asked Tony whether the JETASTIC credit by examination program extended to science courses like zoology, chemistry, microbiology, and physics. Tony's answer was yes, of course. It did not take Tony long before he had capitalized on this new opportunity. By the start of classes in the fall, he had recruited 44 pre-med students seeking to do their 30 semester hours in the sciences at Golgotha University using the school's JETASTIC credit by examination program, before transferring to the medical school in the Caribbean. It was a diverse group. Other chiropractors, medical specialists like X-ray technicians, laboratory technicians, and physical therapists, nurses, and even a veterinarian. The group included 5 women and several students who were recent immigrants to the US. All the incoming students wished to get things done quickly without having to disrupt their working lives by attending regular college courses. If it were not for the objections of Miss Solomayabot, it would have been another of Tony Bok's strokes of pure genius.
You are selling degrees to the highest bidder. You might as well just print degrees and eliminate all the requirements.
No. Strongly no. They must take an examination to demonstrate their knowledge. We are just offering these students an option. Either sit in a class for a semester, doing a variety of projects and assignments, and then take a final, or just take the final. We are not selling degrees. False assertion.
Those projects and assignments prepare them for the exam. They assist in learning. They deepen the student's knowledge and experience. They provide life skills that the students will need later in their professional careers.
I am not sure that the projects and the assignments that you require do what you say they do. I understand from talking to your former students that a lot of their time was wasted.
I find that comment humiliating and totally false.
Poor Howard Joyce. As the college's president, he had to mediate between the two, a task for which he was woefully prepared. He kept encouraging them to speak in quieter, more reasonable voices. Neither did. In pure desperation, he assigned resolving the issue to the college's vice president, Ben Hogan. Ben Hogan interviewed one of the college's students. Thanks for coming in. I want to ask you about your zoology class.
Well, sir, it was the hardest class that I have ever taken. Probably like 3 or 4 other classes in one. Our instructor began the very first day by saying, "You've all heard of the principle of survival of the fittest. Well, ladies and gentlemen, this class operates on survival of the fittest. Understand this, and understand it clearly. I will award only 1 A and 1 B. Everyone else will be given a C, D, or F. And yes, I do give the grade of F. This class has 8 unit examinations and 1 final exam. The unit examinations are worth a maximum of 100 points each. The final examination is worth 200 points. Now suppose that you manage to get every question on every exam correct and you have, thus, earn 1,000 points. With those 1,000 points, you will have only earned a C grade. You need to earn at least 1,500 points to be considered for the A grade and at least 1,300 points to be considered for the B grade. You will earn those extra points by your work in the laboratory, by your microscope work, by preparing slides, by the quality of your dissections, by your laboratory reports, by your extraordinary care and precision in the various tasks that I will assign you. Messy and sloppy work will be penalized. I said this class operated on the principle of survival of the fittest. I know that most of you are taking this course because you wish to go to medical school and become a medical doctor. I have been fortunate to have often been a member of the teams that assess the readiness of candidates for medical school study. My recommendations are valued. When I say that a student that I have taught is ready, the medical school assessment team nearly always agrees. They know that I will only recommend the very best qualified candidates. I will say this once and only once. In terms of your eventual career options, there is no course that you will take in college which is more important. This course, and my evaluation of your abilities, will determine whether you can become a medical doctor.
Very interesting. I selected you for this interview because of your high grade point average. Almost a straight A average.
Yes, sir. I have made only one B while I was in college.
In what course did you get your B?
In zoology. I had 1,462 points. There was a friend of mine who earned 1,360 points, but still got a C.
Did your instructor promise you a letter of recommendation?
Yes. She said that I was adequately prepared.
Thank you for coming in. The Maynard L. Bryan Osteopathic College of Medicine occupied a squat, four-story building just down from the busy intersection of 6th and Hill in downtown Los Angeles. It had been founded in 1904 by one of Dr. Andrew Taylor Still's very first wave of osteopathic students. Until the late 1920s, it had been the only osteopathic medical college on the Pacific Coast. Every year, it admitted about 50 new medical students, and typically, 75% of those students graduated to become osteopathic medical doctors. Osteopathic medicine was often seen as a non-traditional philosophy of medical care, focused on a holistic view that all body systems are interrelated and dependent on one another. Osteopathic medicine claims to emphasize wellness rather than treating a specific, symptomatic illness. Wholeness instead of disparateness. In 1943, with many of its teaching faculty drafted into military service, the Maynard L. Bryan Osteopathic College of Medicine sought to hire new staff members. A young woman from Norway was invited for an interview.
Miss Soli Myhabot, I want to thank you for coming in to talk with us. Don't be frightened. Just a chance to get to know you better. I understand that you were once an Olympic skier.
In Norway when I was 18, I tried out for the national team, and was named as the second alternate, and, so, attended the 1936 games, but did not compete. Not everyone today remembers, but Norway won the medals count with 15 medals. Germany, the game's host country, only won 6.
And when did you migrate to the United States?
I migrated in January 1940, just months before Germany invaded my country. I had earned my degree in human physiology and thought I wanted to do medical research.
And why did you come to Southern California?
I came to Southern California because that was where Sonia Henie now lived. She seemed so happy in all the newsreels. Happy in a sunny place.
What areas of expertise could you bring to your work at the Maynard L. Bryan Osteopathic College of Medicine?
I have been trained in human anatomy and in human physiology. I can also teach courses in microbiology.
Could you work with cadavers? We may have need for someone to display human anatomy on cadavers.
Humans are animals, just like all the other animals. Dissecting a human body is no different from dissecting a dog or a cat or a frog. I would have no problem with that.
Miss Solveig Linnea Solimayabot was hired as medical lecturer at the Osteopathic College. In 1960, when her war with Tony Box surfaced, she was still teaching at the Osteopathic College. That is, she was teaching both at Golgotha University and at the Osteopathic College. She had to carefully arrange her schedules so it would work. Miss Solimayabot was also on the admissions committee for the Osteopathic College. When Ben Hogan learned of the details of her dual employment, he asked her, "Have any of the students from our college applied to the Osteopathic College?"
"Yes, but I only share the information with the very best students, the ones who earn the top grades in my classes."
The news that Ben Hogan had uncovered during his investigation did not sit well with college president Howard Joyce. He wrestled with possible next steps for over a week. After much agonizing deliberation, he finally requested that Ms. Solimayabot submit her resignation. In his report to the Board of Trustees, Howard Joyce wrote, "She has made herself into a gatekeeper, determining by her own whims who should and who should not become a medical doctor. In so doing, she is not acting in the best interests of the university." When Ben Hogan went to her former classroom, he found that it was totally devoid of materials and apparatus. Nothing left. Only chairs and tables. Everything, the microscopes, the specimens, the reference materials, the lab equipment. All of it had belonged to Miss Solimayabot. She had purchased all of it with her own money. Time, Ben Hogan thought, to refurbish and restock our science labs. To do so, of course, would require Tony Box to raise even more money, something that Tony was more than happy to do. He even used photographs of the new laboratory equipment in his recruiting brochures. Everything was just jet-tastic. Just jet-tastic.
Appaloosa Springs Audio Theater is a creative collaboration whose purpose is to write, produce, and share original story content through webcast radio experiences.